Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Has anyone ever referred to you as a sex addict? What exactly is a sex addict? Addiction is defined as any hobby or obsession you have that begins to interfere with the manner in which you function on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. For example, a true sex addict would be someone who skips work so that he or she can go and have sex with someone, or so that they can stay home and watch pornography all day. Another example would be a man who spends so much money on street prostitutes, professional call girls, or upscale erotic escorts every month that he barely has enough money to pay his rent or mortgage or his utilities and groceries. Have you ever pushed the important priorities of your life to the back burner so that you could primarily concentrate on the pursuit of sexual gratification? My guest tonight knows all too well about the pitfalls of sex addiction. He was so addicted to the pursuit of instantaneous sexual gratification that he began to feel like his life was spinning totally out of control. Later, he got a handle on his addiction and straightened his life out, and eventually went on to write a book designed to help other men as well as women overcome their own challenges with sex addiction. Who is this man who has experienced the highs and lows that sexual addiction causes and now makes it his passion to share his wisdom with others? His name is Armistead Burks, otherwise known as AD, and tonight AD is going to discuss a number of his personal episodes of sex addiction to hopefully help some of my male and female listeners identify if they might be experiencing the same symptoms, as Brother Burks takes time out of his schedule in order to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in their race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect the woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo! Mode One! This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend Alan Roger Curry. Mode One, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha! Alan Roger Curry.
Sometimes you flip, sometimes we wild out and act like lunatics. We moving too fast, the whole world's in a rush. Everybody just hush.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, February. Now, you know, this is the month of the year I always have to get tongue-tied because, you know, in my Ebonic style, a lot of brothers, we say February, February. And so I have to enunciate when I get to this month. It's always my most challenging month of the year. But today is Thursday, February 6th, the first Thursday in February. And tonight, the subject is going to be sex addiction. Sex addiction. Now, that's always a controversial. Well, not necessarily. It depends on who's talking about it and how deep they get into it. But, well, here I'll say this. Here's my particular controversy with it. And this is actually what I'm going to be one of the things I'm going to be discussing with my guest for the evening. Is that a lot of people in society, they use that term very loosely. Like some people, not only in regards to sex, but just anything, people will throw addict. Like sometimes if you just really like something, people will say, oh, like I've been called a chicken wing addict, you know. And I know that's lighthearted and, you know, there's a few other things I've been called. But I'm going to confess something. That I don't know if I've ever now I confess a lot of my personal life on air, and but I actually one time went to I don't know if you know just like they got Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a group called Sex Addicts Anonymous, SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous. So if you've been diagnosed as being a sex addict, or if you think yourself you're a sex addict, you can go to one of the meetings. And, yeah, when I lived in Los Angeles, it was back in, I want to say, either late 1995 or early 1996, I actually once went to a sex addicts meeting, only to find out from the guy who was leading the discussion that I actually was not a sex addict, which I deep down I knew I wasn't. But a couple of friends had suggested it. Because what it was, what provoked it for me was, as most of my listeners know, next to physical sex, I love phone sex. I'm really big into phone sex. And quite frankly, I've had weeks and months where I've engaged in phone sex more frequently than I have physical sex. I think what happened, when I look at it retrospectively, I think one of the things that contributed to it was the fact that when Magic Johnson first announced that he was HIV positive, I'm just going to keep it real. I, to a certain degree, and some of my friends laugh when I say this, but I'm actually serious, I became scared of pussy. I actually became somewhat scared of pussy. I was like, damn, so you telling me I can fuck a woman and, you know, and become HIV positive? So I started leaning more towards phone sex. And I was having phone sex with, like, sometimes, you know, 5, 6, 7, sometimes many as, like, 10 different women a week, every week. And so because I was really so into phone sex, you know, some friends said, man, Alan, I think you a sex addict. I think you a sex addict. So I ended up going to this meeting in Los Angeles, and come to find out, you know, because it was probably about, I don't know, I want to say roughly about 9 people there. It was about 3 women, and including myself, about 5 or 6 guys. And their stories were they far exceeded my little stuff. That's what I knew. When I listened to their stories, even before the guy who led the discussion told me, I was like, okay, these people are talking about stuff that, you know. And sure enough, at the end of the discussion, the guy came up, the leader or whatever, he told me, he said, Alan, he said, based on what you talked about, he said, no, you're not. You're just a guy who really enjoys phone sex, but you're not a sex addict. Because here's what he told me, and again, when I get into my conversation with my guest tonight, I'm sure he'll get into detail of his description and definition of a sex addict. But what I was told at this meeting is if you just like to fuck or you like to do something sexual, but it's not affecting your family life, your career, or your finances, or your health, then that's not really a sex addict. If you just enjoy doing something and you do it a lot, that doesn't make you an addict. When you can get categorized as an addict is like, say, you like doing something sexual, whether it's having sex or watching porn or masturbating to the point where you're like starting to skip work to do it. You're starting to spend so much money on it that you don't even have enough money to pay your bills, like your utilities and your rent or mortgage. Or you might be just being really reckless to the point where you could be, you know, putting yourself at risk to catching a disease. And even though you know that, you still are reckless. What else were some of the examples they gave me? Like if you were married and instead of going to your daughter's wedding, you skipped your daughter's wedding to fuck somebody or watch porn. When you're doing stuff like that, that's when you're at addict status. Is again, yeah, when you're doing something where you compromising your career, you potentially compromising your finances, you potentially compromising your health, your marriage, anything along those lines. And that's kind of the stories I was hearing when I was at that one time sex addicts meeting, is that, you know, there was like a couple guys there that they would be calling 1-900 number phone sex numbers while they were at work. Or one woman, she said she would just spontaneously be like masturbating when she was on the bus. And she would even pay guys to watch her masturbate on the bus. And I was like, damn, y'all got some deep shit up in this motherfucker. So anyway, yeah, I was proven not to be a true, valid bag bus. Yeah, I was proven not to be a sex addict. I was just, again, I was just, yeah, because the only story I had was like, I said, hey, you know, I used to like to fuck a lot, but now I find myself almost wanting to have phone sex as much, if not more, than I like fucking. And everybody looked at me like, oh, that ain't shit. They're like, shit. I mean, they were like, you know. Anyway, so that's my little sex addict story. So, but yeah, it should be an interesting discussion tonight. Now, before I get to my guest, next week I will have a woman that's going to have a record of more than any female guest I've had. And if you listened to my show last week, I had a woman named Lauren Mazervi. She's from Toronto, Canada. And on most of my episodes I do, I get both. I usually get some degree of feedback on the show and as it relates to the guests. Some guests all my listeners will love. Some guests all my listeners will criticize. And then, of course, there's some guests that somewhere in between, they get a certain percentage of compliments, certain percentage of criticisms. Well, Lauren, you know, and my male listeners, they can be hard on my female guests. But Lauren actually got a lot of props from my listeners. Now, she got her share of criticisms, too. But she got a lot, I would say, overall, the feedback I received, I would probably say three-fourths of the feedback I got about her was complimentary. And I'd say about roughly one-fourth was critical. And then there were a handful of people that thought she was full of shit. They thought she was contradicted herself like two or three times in the discussion. And, you know, you're my listener, so you know. My listeners, I give them credit. They can immediately identify when somebody's full of shit. If somebody's, like, saying stuff that's inconsistent with something they said earlier or contradictory to something they said earlier, hypocritical to something they said earlier. And she did. When I listened to the show again, she did. Like, I give you one example of a time she was kind of contradictory. She said she actually endorsed my Mode 1 approach. She said, I'm a fan of Mode 1. She said, but my one criticism of Mode 1 is that you're not really taking enough time to get to know a woman before letting her know you want to have sex with her. You're just kind of letting her know from the get-go. And she said, I respect that, but, you know, maybe you should get to know her first. But then later on in the interview, she said she didn't like conventional pickup artists because they'll tell you that they want to get to know you before they mention anything about sex. And she said she felt like that was manipulative on their part. So, see, that was something that made her look contradictory. Then one more quick thing. I don't mean to nitpick on her, but she had one thing where she said she never has indulged in casual sex and never would. But then a few minutes later, she was fawning over the actor, Michael Fassbender, and she said she would have casual sex with him at the drop of a dime. But anyway, she got, like I said, she got more compliments than she did criticisms from my listeners. And here's the thing. She is going to be on my show again next week. I've never had a female guest on my show twice in a three-week period. Never, ever, ever. I've had two male guests that have done that before. Sasha Daygame, which a lot of my listeners are familiar with, he's been on my show twice in a three-week period before. And David X has also been on my show twice in a three-week period before. But Lauren will be the first female guest I've ever had on my show twice in a three. So, yeah, she's going to be on my show next week. I'm calling it my Valentine's Day Potpourri open forum discussion. We're going to discuss about probably four, five, six different topics next week. I know one of them is going to be, what are the benefits of a single heterosexual male engaging in a long-term, purely platonic friendship with a single woman? Because most men don't feel like there's any benefit to being platonic friends with women, particularly single women. So that will be one of my discussions. Another discussion will be, should women only make the first move for casual sex? Should men kind of lay back and let women make the first move for casual sex? Another topic is going to be, what motivates women to become a man's mistress or side bitch? You know, a lot of women seem to be down with wanting to be a man's mistress or side woman. So, anyway, that will be next week. I love all my listeners, And, you know, I have particular love for my live listeners, and even more specifically, my chat room listeners. So I see, who do I see in my chat room? I see my number one most loyal listener, Adrian, a.k.a. Diva362636. Now, Adrian, she might be concerned right now. She might be concerned because I don't know if you know, but Adrian is a big Miami Heat fan. More specifically, she's a big LeBron James fan because he's from her home state of Ohio. The rumor is, and it's just at rumor status, but there's a rumor that at the end of the season, LeBron might go to the Clippers and Blake Griffin would go to the Heat. That's an interesting rumor out there, that LeBron James will leave Miami and go to Los Angeles Clippers. Oh, Diva clarified. She corrected me. She said she is not more of a LeBron James fan than a Heat fan. She said she is a Miami Heat fan. So basically she's saying she don't give a fuck if LeBron James leaves Miami for the Los Angeles Clippers. But anyway, again, that's just a rumor right now. But she's in my chat room as Diva362436. I got my main man, Don B be acting up in the chat room. I told him he better be a good boy tonight, because he be just causing all kinds of humorous drama in my chat room. Don B, I got a couple guests in my chat room. I got None731 is in my chat room. Well, you know who won the Super Bowl by now. Seattle Seahawks kicked that ass. I mean, they kicked that ass. Woo! Yeah, Denver, they put the beat down on Denver. Put the beat down on them. I mean, I ain't gonna lie, man, I felt sorry for Peyton Manning. You know, I mean, his team just got whooped. I mean, they 43-8. I don't know. I don't think anybody saw that coming. So, but yeah, the Seattle Seahawks are now the champions, and, you know, much props to them. Congratulations to them. I was reading that the Republicans been using phony Democratic websites. They created some phony Democratic websites. What's up with that? Come on now. Didn't they learn from former President Nixon? You know what I mean? Goodness gracious. I mean, I don't want to get political on my show, because I know I got some Republicans that listen to my show. But, man, that's just – I don't get that. And tonight is the last night of a gentleman that I used to indirectly work with. Tonight's show host, Jay. Oh, it's Kent in the chat room. Hey, what's up, Kent? Okay, Kent, he called in last week. Jay Leno, who's the host of the Tonight Show. I used to work at NBC Studios back in 1995. And I was what was called an NBC, and that's kind of like the most popular entry-level position at NBC. And a couple other studios have pages. I think CBS has pages. I want to say ABC does too. But NBC had the most noteworthy page program, because a lot of former pages went on to do bigger and better things. Like Regis Philbin used to be an NBC page. Michael Eisner, who heads of Disney, used to be an NBC page. Oh, man, that's so many people. Kate Jackson used to be on Charlie's Angels, used to be an NBC page. It's a long list. They used to give us this list. It's a lot of people who used to be NBC pages. And I was one of those. I was an NBC page. Matter of fact, I feel proud to be an NBC page, because the New York Times actually did an article about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, that said it is harder to become an NBC page than it is to get in most, if not all, of the Ivy League institutions. Like, it's harder to be an NBC page than it is to get into Yale or Harvard. And because they have, like, something like 10,000 applicants per year, and only about 75 to 100 of those applicants get hired. And I was one of those. And it was a great experience. So anyway, we had a number of responsibilities under our belt. Like, we gave studio tours to people. We would work in different departments to get exposure to different departments. And we would work on different shows. Like, we would handle, like, the audience seating and VIP seating for a lot of the shows. So I worked on The Tonight Show quite a bit. I worked on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I worked on LL Cool J's show, In the House, and one or two other shows. And anyway, Jay Leno, tonight is his last night for the second time on The Tonight Show. Now, you know, he already had officially one farewell show when Conan took over, but then they ended up giving Conan the boot, and they brought Jay back. But this is his second farewell show because now Fallon, who used to be on Saturday Night Live, is taking over. So Jimmy Fallon is taking over tonight's show tonight. So if you want to tune in tonight, but you'll probably still be listening to my show. But yeah, tonight is his last night on NBC. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a quick intermission break. And when I get back, I will introduce my guest and we will get this conversation started. So don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. Oh, I just saw EVP come in my phone queue. Irvin V. Pulliam III, EVP 3. He's one of the biggest Seattle Seahawks fans in the world. And he was in my phone queue when I was talking about his team, but I see him in there now. So EVP 3, kudos to you. He's one of the famed 12th men. You know, they have their fans that are known as the 12th man. And EVP 3, he's been in a number of the Seahawks games, so he's part of that 12th man. They had a heck of a parade, 700,000. Yes, sir. Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson. Great team, man. Great team. My hat is off to him. But I'll be right back after this intermission break.
Can you feel the tension? You know what's coming up next, don't you? You all know what's coming up next. So, what can I tell you? I'm excited. I'm standing backstage and I'm all jittery. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. What can I tell you? I read this guy's book about 2 years ago, and this is some of the most powerful shit I've read. The guy's mind-blowing. He's got a radio show. He's been all over the place. He's got crazy fans. He's amazing at what he does. He loves helping people as well. This guy will go on for hours and hours, even if it's like one person or 100 people. He doesn't give a shit. He'll stand there and he'll help people and help him and help him and just keep it. And he loves this stuff. He's passionate about it. He changed my life. He's changing everybody's life in the room and thousands of people, and he's amazing. I'm really happy. I consider him one of my mentors. I love the guy. Please go crazy for Alan Roger Curry.
And I need to know what you said to the Japanese girl on roller skates.
I went up to her. I said, you got a talent for this rollerblading thing. And that was probably the only moment when she was smiling. She was like, yes, I love to rollerblade. I said, well, to be quite frank with you, I didn't give a fuck about rollerblading. I said, your ass looks so juicy in that, what is that, spandex? And she was like, oh, my God, I mean, would you just come to Venice Beach to just look at women's asses? I was like, is that a trick question?
Please visit www.mode1.net for more information on the Direct Approach Dating Summit 2010 DVD. Are you an expert and or book author who offers men and women products and services related to dating and relationships? If you have a new product, a valuable service, or upcoming event or speaking presentation that you would like to advertise on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network that is guaranteed to hit your target demographic audience, then look no further than Blog Talk Radio's number one talk radio podcast program for active dating singles. Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry has had more episodes ranked number one in the category of romance, dating and relationships, love and sex, and overall self-help for singles than any other talk radio podcast program on the entire Blog Talk Radio network since January of 2008. I will help you advertise any product, service, or event that is designed to help men and women improve their love lives, sex lives, and overall social lives. Please write me at Blog Talk Radio Advertising at mode1.net. That's MODEONE.net. Don't wait. Do it now.
single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Don B, quit flirting with Adrienne. Adrienne is an engaged woman. She is a happily engaged woman. I see you in the chat room flirting with my girl Adrienne. She is snatched up. She's taken. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. I see Christian Davis in my chat room. Christian Davis just came in my chat room, and as well as the listeners who I mentioned already. Now, my guest for the evening was born in Houston, Texas, and raised in Missouri City, in a very diverse neighborhood outside of Houston. His parents divorced when he was 4 years old, so consequently he was raised primarily by his mother, who was and still is a professional counselor. My guest for the evening was driven to excel from an early age. He received awards in science, math, and history. Other accomplishments while he was in school centered around music, such as singing competitions, singing with the Fort Bend Boys Choir, and a lead in the local TV Christmas commercial. At age 15, my guest for the evening traveled as a people-to-people student ambassador to Russia. Then later, while a student at Grinnell College, he sang at Carnegie Hall with the Grinnell Singers. After earning a degree in chemistry from Grinnell College, you know he's heavy duty intellectually if he has a degree in chemistry, he pursued a professional music career while teaching science in the Atlanta, Nashville, and Houston public school systems. My guest for the evening furthered his education with a master's in business administration from Rice University and later worked in real estate development. And he completed his own development projects and transitioned into corporate real estate for the primary resource his state of Texas is known for. Guest for the evening feels like he has a great relationship with God. And he was quoted as saying, "I truly believe God gives warning before destruction. God would deliver those warning signs through close friends, mentors I've had since high school, counselors, and books." My guest for the evening is a member of the Brentwood Baptist Church. And the reason why he's on my show tonight is because he is the author of a book called Sex and Surrender, An Addict's Journey. Sex and Surrender, An Addict's Journey, because he is a self-proclaimed sex addict, and he's here to talk about how it developed, how he overcame it, and what he has, what type of advice he has for men and women who he wants to help prevent going down the same road. So, on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network and my listeners of Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for Mr. Armistead, aka AD Burke.
are you this evening?
Fine, and you. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on your show. Help promote my message of trying to get out of sex addiction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Glad to have you. Glad to have you, brother. So you grew up in the Houston area where Beyonce grew up.
Yeah.
So when did you – well, first, let me – it looks like you had a talent for singing. When did you know from the time you were, like, just a small boy that you could sing?
It was funny. I started singing in church choir at 4. You were supposed to start at age 5, and my director, Ms. Gatlin, an amazing singer, she used to sing with the Houston Symphony. She recognized the talent early, and so she, you know, played favoritism because she heard me sing, and I started singing in church choir at 4.
Okay. Now, I had a cousin that actually went to Grinnell College. How did you like that experience?
Grinnell was, as I say, a very unique experience. It's located in the middle of Iowa, between Des Moines and Iowa City. And everybody says, oh, potatoes, no, corn. Iowa is corn, Idaho is potatoes. But it was a very unique experience because you're out in the middle of nowhere, and me coming from a metropolitan area such as Houston, you get accustomed to certain things, places to go, just normal things like a grocery store. Their biggest highlight in Grinnell was Walmart. So you basically become very creative and finding fun ways to entertain yourself in college, as most people do.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you were already in the phone queue when I was talking about my own brief experience where I had a couple of friends that it was more actually in a lighthearted way were starting to refer to me as a sex addict. So,
yeah,
so I ended up going to at least one. I went to one Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting when I lived in Los Angeles, only to find out I wasn't really a sex addict. So I'm going to tell you what I was told, and then you can tell me if you totally agree, partially agree, or don't agree at all with their definition. They said you are not, just because you love having, you could be having sex 3 times a day every day and not be a sex addict, or you can even be watching porn on a regular basis and not be. They said the moment you become an addict is when you're so into some sexual related activity to the point where you've begun to compromise your career, your finances, your health, or your family life. And so at that time, they said I wasn't really an addict because I hadn't reached a level where, like, I, you know, like my thing was I was starting, at that time, that's when I was really starting to get into to phone sex. I love phone sex. And I was having phone sex with like 5 to 10 different women a week, every week. And, you know, a couple of friends were like, dang, man, you like a phone sex addict. But they said, no, the guy who led the discussion, he was like, Alan, if you're not skipping work to have phone sex, or you're not spending a bunch of money in order to have phone sex, or it's not, you know, compromising your life some kind of way, then no, that means you just love to have phone sex. I was like, okay, cool. So based on that, what's been your general, I guess, description, definition, and then I guess go into how you first start feeling like you had the symptoms of being a sex addict.
Okay, so let me first sort of address what you stated. You went to an SA meeting, Sex Addictions Anonymous, SAA meeting, and there are different types of meetings regarding sex addiction. I personally prefer the SLAA because sex addiction is connected to love addiction. And so the person who said that you were not a sex addict because of XYZ, my first question would be, are they a certified sex addiction therapist? Because everybody thinks they know everything, but if you haven't been specifically trained in this particular area, you might basically misdiagnose an individual. So, for instance, when you look at some of the behavior I exhibited during my addiction, a lot of people are saying, well, you truly weren't an addict. However, when I went to a certified sex addiction therapist, he said the escalation of events is what classified you as an addict. So it's, and I really want to hone in on that because it's so easy to sort of say, oh, well, I don't fit this particular description, therefore I'm not an addict, when in actuality you may be an addict, but your description isn't fitting level 1, 2, or 3. So it's very specific, and what I would suggest anybody do is make sure they go to a certified sex addiction therapist if they're trying to get a true diagnosis regarding their addiction. And also Patrick Carnes, he's sort of the godfather regarding sex addiction. So when Tiger Woods had his little episode, he went to Patrick Carnes Institute to get and seek help. But when you're talking about addiction, it really goes back to what I say in terms of, to give a layman's definition of addiction, I always say addiction is equal to pain. So at any time when you're utilizing a substance, sex, food, anything, to escape pain, that becomes an addiction.
To escape pain.
Right. Okay. So, and it goes back, I'm going to read your actual definition, and it sort of goes, the definition is for alcohol. So it says, a common definition of alcoholism or drug dependency is that a person has a pathological relationship with a mood-altering chemical. The relationship progresses to the point where alcohol is necessary to feel normal. I put in quotes, sex addiction. Thus, as in our definition of addiction, the relationship with sex is with sex versus people. So basically, you're using sex instead of an actual drug. And there's a book called Hooked that discusses how the brain operates during sex. And you look at, and I say, I don't want to get too scientific, but if you look at the brain activity during sex and you look at the brain activity of a person who's on drugs, they mimic each other. So those same endorphin and hormones are being triggered.
Okay, interesting.
So I go back to Hooked. There's a book called Hooked. You can look it up, Amazon, as well as any of Patrick Carnes' books. And if you go to my website, I reference both of those under my sex test under helpful resources.
Okay, now you mentioned, okay, see, this is why I said earlier in my intro where I consider this whole concept as at least a little bit controversial for me. Because, like, you mentioned Tiger Woods, and I remember when he supposedly went to, you know, a sex addict therapist or whatever, but I don't know all the details, but to me, I don't consider a guy who cheats on their wife is per se a sex addict. I just look at that as an adulterer. So I guess one of my questions would be, what would you say is the thing that distinguishes an adulterer from a womanizer from a sex addict?
Well, it goes back to, I can only speak clearly for the addict. And to me, the difference there is you're utilizing it to feel normal. So anytime you're feeling pain or stressed, you're using sex to handle that. When you look at adultery, I think that's really just a split in the relationship between a married couple. And so there were probably issues in that relationship that don't necessitate an actual addiction. You know, you can have a person that cheats one time and doesn't, you know, or a person that cheats consistently but really isn't utilizing sex to deal with pain, or they're just utilizing it for escape from the marriage. But when you talk about addiction, you know, you look at things that, like I did, were putting myself in situations that were really could put my life in danger without any, you know, recourse. I'm not thinking of, okay, I'm about to have sex with this person, you know, as they say, naked head, and then you end up dead. So the whole process and the trajectory, I would say, of an adulterer versus an addict are totally different.
Mm-hmm. Well, shoot, you know, based on your definition of escaping pain, I might be a chicken wing addict, you know, 'cause,
And you know what? That could be true. Because, I mean,
my friends always tease me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hate the way, from your definition of how you were acting out via phone sex, I think you might have been utilizing that, given the number you said it wasn't just with one individual. It was several different women, if I'm correct.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I was having – I mean, truthfully, to this day, I still have quite a bit of phone sex, but I've never thought of myself as a true phone sex addict, because I guess the reason why I've never felt like I was a true addict, because I can't control it. It ain't like it's this, like, what I want to say, beyond my control type obsession. One of the things I was mentioning at the beginning of the show is one of the things that I did start going into phone sex was because it was happening around the time Magic Johnson announced he was HIV positive. And it's crazy, my son. To a degree, I started becoming scared of pussy. Cause see,
yeah,
I don't really like to wear condoms. I mean, I do, because I know I want to, you know, protect myself from both unwanted pregnancies as well as diseases. But
yep,
if I have my preference, though, I just don't really like. So I didn't want to have a bunch of raw dog, casual physical sex because I was scared of contracting something. So I think that's what first led me into. And then the second thing was that some women I knew at the time were gassing my head up and, you know, saying stuff to me like, "Oh, Alan, you really know how to talk dirty. I mean, you really know how to get a woman's pussy wet." And I got the big head, so I just started going crazy. I mean, I was having phone sex with like 20, 25 women a month, almost every month.
Right, so
and,
that was basically feeding your ego.
Yeah, it was definitely an ego feeder. Now, on the more, that was the thing I would say that falls along the lines of escaping pain, and I somewhat say it lightheartedly, but I'm also a little bit serious. Whenever I'm frustrated, stressed out, I definitely want some chicken wings and some peach snapple. I mean, man, that's like my cocaine, so to speak, because, yeah, if I've had, like, say, a bad day or I hear some news that has depressed me or left me feeling agitated, first thing I think, man, I got to go to Hooters and I got to get me some chicken wings and I got to drink some peach snapple. And so that's like one of the things my listeners know. They always know I crack a lot of jokes related to my love for chicken wings and peach snapple. But it's like real. I mean, here's the funniest thing that I'm going to move on from my little stuff. The worst thing was I was with some friends, and they were like, "Damn, Alan, you really love chicken wings and peach snapple." But they said, "Okay, we're going to ask you a question." I said, "Okay." They said, "Say Halle Berry was on one bed, butt naked, with her legs open, and on the other bed was this big bowl of chicken wings, and if you didn't eat those chicken wings right at that moment, you wouldn't be able to eat them for another 6 months. Which bed would you go to?" And I stood there thinking, and they lost it. These two friends, they just like lost. They said, "Oh my God, man, you were truly, dude." They was like, "You actually are thinking about that shit? Oh my God, man, you are crazy." But I was like, "Man, 6 months without wings? Shit, you know, Halle Berry, I don't know, she's a little crazy anyway." So,
yeah,
but,
you might actually have a food addiction. I mean, it goes back to, you know, are you using it to escape pain? And but let's say, only thing I want to get back to, especially given we're discussing sex, and I think what's really gotten lost in the whole discussion regarding sex is sort of the sanctity which, you know, God intended sex for. I hate to go back and be too scientific, but if you also look at what happens during sex in the brain, you know, it's chemically set up to be a bonding experience between two people. And our society has just taken the whole purpose of sex and just watered it down to just fill a void in people's time and not really dealing with emotional issues that can be revolved and happen during sex.
Okay, now what was your, I read through your ebook
but kind of let my listeners know, what was kind of the first either singular incident or series of incidents that made you start saying to yourself, okay, I think this is going beyond just a desire for sex or a love of sex. This is kind of starting to transition into an addiction.
It sort of got to the point where, you know, I realized, and you mentioned this earlier about when it starts affecting your family. You know, I was the only child, and I always wanted a family, but my sexual behavior wasn't sort of setting me up for success around that. And so I never forget, I had a dream, basically, where I got caught having sex at my mom's house. And from that dream, it was like a witch hunt, you know, Salem witch hunt where they, you know, put you in front of all the folks. And in this particular dream, it was like all the church members were there looking, and, you know, it was like they're going to hang me. And so during the dream, a person said, you know, how are you going to get out of this? And so that sort of started the process of me realizing, okay, you know, this isn't just casual recreational sex that some people have mentioned it. And no, this is really an issue, and you need to get some help regarding it.
So the first incident was the dream, huh?
Yes. That's when I realized, okay, this has gotten to be a pattern because, you know, you start having sex, and then you, especially when you look at the sex addictive cycle, you know, you have sex, you feel good, then you get depressed afterwards because you realize you still aren't dealing with the root issue, which is causing the pain.
Okay. And what made you say, as opposed to just, say, dealing with it within yourself and among maybe your family members and close friends, what made you say, I want to write a book about this?
Well, it was sort of, I feel like God was calling me out of it. And if I could, you know, use my experiences to help other people, that was, you know, that's the whole reason we're alive, you know. If I have an experience that can help somebody or you have an experience, I think your show is a prime example. The reason why you're having this discussion here is you're trying to help others. And I knew me going through this, there were so many people I ran into that were other fellow sex addicts and didn't feel that, you know, they could get out of it. And my four-step process of getting it, and the first step is, you know, establishing or reestablishing a relationship with God. So, I was with so many people that had been marginalized based on the sex that they were having, and it's like, okay, you can't come to God. You're an outcast. It's like, no, that's not it. It's not until you come to God and deal with your issues are you going to be able to get out of it. And if you look at any 12-step program, there's a whole spiritual component. They'll say higher power. But, you know, given, I think, your audience, most of your audience would basically say God.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment for the conversation and for my guests, you can call in 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'm going to take a quick intermission break, but when I get back, I will have more questions for my guest, A.D. Burks. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist. I'm in love with a star.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex disease.
This is Nikki Trum, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Brandy L. Davis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Nikki Ransom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction. Right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net.
All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Thanks for tuning in. It's nice to see you all again, so.
If you found this page, I'm guessing at least on some level you'd like more success.
Seducing sexy ladies. Here's the deal.
My name's Sasha. Hello. And I like women.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
This website has tons of resources to help you guys get that success that you want. It's all there for you. The articles, the videos, my blog with lots of adventures and tips. It's all there for you guys.
Let's make the magic happen.
If you're interested in some more intense training, take one of my boot camps. They are fucking good. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm doing boot camps all around the world, so I might be coming to your city.
I would love to come over there and teach you this stuff because it's awesome. And you learn how to meet tons of hot girls.
If you're in London, this is the guy. He's going to take good care of you.
He's really present in the moment. He's really good. He hooks up with tons of girls. Good teacher and just somebody you want to hang out with and learn from.
Oh, so many names.
It's my first name and my sister.
Okay. Well, I will see you.
You will?
Ryan.
Ryan. We do.
Over the last few years, I've dedicated my life to getting good in a sort of fun and natural way of meeting women in the daytime.
What are you doing actually in your free time? What's your goal?
I meet beautiful girls on the streets. You know, chap girls on the street. Sound test? Sound test 1, 2, 3, 4. Sexy man. Hi. Can I get a little fist action? We're filming. I'm doing a little fist. Just come on. You know you want to. You know you want to fist me right now. Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, check out the bootcamp page if you're interested in that.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's useful to you. So please.
Sasha@sashapway.com. Thanks for coming to the site and...
Stop being a fucking... Just... What? I mean, come on, people. She's there in front of you. That's the only indicator of interest you need. She's there. You're there. Go for it.
Please pay a visit to www.sashapua.com.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lines, and or sex lines. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to my discussion about sex addiction with book author A.D. Burks on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, the most listened to talk radio podcast program on the Blog Talk Radio Network in the category of romance and self-help for dating and relationships. And what we're talking about tonight is overcoming sex addiction. And my guest is a book author by the name of A.D. Burks, who wrote a book called Sex and Surrender, The Addicts and Addicts Journey. And A.D., let me ask you this. How would you say, now you say you felt compelled to write this book to, you know, share your wisdom and kind of your pitfalls with other people. What has been the general feedback from this book? Like, how did writing this book change you, change your life, and how did it affect the people close to you?
Well, it was hard, you know, the people close to me, because it's such a small snippet of my life, and it's probably the worst, you know, representation of the person that I am, you know, and people that love you don't want you, in a sense, exposed for people to, you know, throw rocks at you. But at the same time, when I hear sex addicts that read the book and say, thank you so much for writing this, I totally can relate. You know, I'm very graphic in the book, and it goes back to what I always say is, until you can see yourself in a particular situation, you'll dismiss it. So I had to be graphic, which at the same time meant the people that I loved didn't want that information out. You shouldn't do this. I'll never forget my mom saying, you're giving people a time bomb, you know, this bro. And it's like, it goes back to, I feel and I know God led me to do this to help other people that are in the similar situation. So it was hard at first, you know. I'm 36 years old, and this was the first and only thing that my mom initially didn't support me of, and she's still, you know, I would say not my biggest champion, but she can see the people that it is helping.
Wait, you said your mother is not your biggest champion?
No, she did not. You know, I'm her only child, and you know, for her only child, for everyone to see all the negative things about him, because being an addict is not, I say, the greatest thing in the world. And especially when you explain exactly how you acted out your addiction. And the thing about sex addiction, unlike, you know, other addictions like drugs and alcohol, you don't really see it. And that's what sort of makes it even worse, because people are suffering from it, but you don't see the symptoms. They're going through life every day as an addict, and there's no one to say, oh, you're an addict, let me help you. And that's the biggest problem, is it'll keep going, and people suffer in silence, and that's when addiction wins.
Okay, like you mentioned how important it is to reach people where they are at in their lives and not where they think they should be. Why is that important to you, to their recovery?
Well, if you expect a person to be perfect, that's not reality. And I think a lot of people, especially when you take it from a sort of spiritual standpoint, a lot of people I'm going to be specific, the black church wants you to already gotten through your addiction, not realizing it's the church being accepting of you in your addiction that's going to end up allowing you to form your relationship with God and then therefore get out of your addiction. So it's very key that, you know, you don't come judgmental to a person that's already hurting. You know, like I go back to, addiction is pain, sex is not equal to love. And at the end of the day, everyone wants to be loved. And if I'm not getting loved, how are you going to expect me to make a change? So I, as someone who's been there, I have to be able to meet you where you are so you can see that there is a light at the end of that tunnel.
Okay. Now, you're a role model, I would assume, to a lot of people that you've kind of, you know, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a short example of what you did prior to facing up to your addiction?
Oh, as I say, I hurt a lot of people. You know, as an addict, I earlier talked about ego. It's all about self-gratification. And I would have sex with 3 different people in a night and not even give it a second thought. And these people would be falling in love because, you know, everybody wants to be loved. And it, for me at that time, it was just nothing but a good fuck.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh because this is a serious topic, but the way you said that, it was so real. It was funny to me. So, in other words, you were looking at the sexual interactions as totally casual and devoid of any type of emotional bond, whereas your partners were attaching emotions to it and looking at it as more emotionally profound.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these people were begging for love, and that's the thing about sex addicts. Their best tool is manipulation. So I will give you the impression that, oh, yeah, I'm really into this. Da-da-da-da. You got fucked next. And I
wow.
see that craft, but when you're in that addictive state, you aren't thinking about anybody but yourself. You're already hurting so much, and this is your release, because it goes back to power and control. You know, there are several levels of addiction. And, of course, thank God I was never at the level where, you know, you look at people that rape and, you know, pedophilia. All of that falls into forms of sex addiction, extreme cases, of course. But it goes back to needing to be in control and not feeling valued. So I go back to always, what's behind the addiction. And, you know, I have a 4-step process for breaking addiction, you know, establishing a relationship with God, abstaining from sex, walking away from your triggers, and then coming up with a support network of people who know what your issue is and helping you. But at the end of the day, until you get to the root cause of what's causing you the pain, you're going to keep going back. So it's very key. Everybody looks at addiction, whether it's sex, food, whatever. Don't look at the addiction. That's the symptom. Go back to what's the root cause. Then you have to treat that.
Because you said, again, the addiction is caused by you wanting to escape whatever is causing you pain or frustration or stress.
Correct. And that's the problem. And we really, especially in the black community, we don't do enough addressing and open discussion regarding mental health because, oh, you crazy. No, you're not crazy. You're having some emotional baggage that's probably based on your childhood that nobody wants to address. You know, you look at a lot of people that have sex addiction. Some of them have been molested. You know, there's issues in their family, single-parent homes. All these issues affect how people end up expressing pain.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, as I said, you got to go to the deeper level besides just looking at the addiction.
So let me recap this 4-step process. You say the first step is finding God?
Yes. If you don't have a relationship with God, you got to establish it. Because it goes back to addiction is very self-centered. You're seeking only to gratify yourself. So until you can realize you are not the center of the world, you will always be in your addiction. But and the quickest way I feel that you can realize you're not the center of the world is reconnecting to who is the center of the world, which is God.
Now, what if you ran across somebody who you felt was exhibiting the behavior of a sex addict, but they, upon talking to them, they said they were, you know, agnostic or an atheist? How would you proceed?
Actually, I've had some book discussions with people that are. And, you know, yeah, I have. And it's funny because they say, well, I don't believe in God. I said, well, I understand that's your decision. But at the end of the day, did you just put yourself here? And, you know, the whole religious issue, that's a whole nother debate in itself. But at the end of the day, for this process to work, and if you look at any other 12-step process, there's always an acknowledgement that you're not the center of the world. And there is a higher power besides yourself. So if you choose not to believe in God, come to some realization that you can't be self-centered and only be thinking of yourself, because that's where that's sort of what feeds addiction. You, as I said, you when you talked about the phone sex, you said these women said you had a sexy voice. Well, all that's doing is pumping you up, and what is that going to make you want to do? Keep doing the same thing, and you get in that addictive cycle. So this is, to me, the best way to break that addictive cycle.
So would you, let me ask you this. Would you say that all adult film actors and adult film actresses are sex addicts, or they just love what they do?
As I say, I can't speak for them because that's what they choose to do. But what I would say is if a certified sex addiction therapist classified them as addicts, then they probably would. Now, me personally, would I say pornography? Yeah, I mean, why would you degrade yourself to that extent, letting everybody have sex with you, filming it? But what is it doing? It makes them feel better about themselves. But if you look probably below and deeper, because there's no, you know, I go back to what's the whole point of sex, and it's supposed to be a bonding between two people. So is there really a true bond between people having porn filmed? And it's funny, we talk about sort of breaking the
So wait a minute, let me get this straight, because, you know, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here. So you're saying that anybody who engages in sex without it being for, as you would call it, you know, emotional bonding purposes, shouldn't be engaging in sex?
That I didn't say that. I said let's look at the
purpose
of sex. I mean, I can't make a judgment call for you. That's you as an adult. When you look at sex addiction, sex addicts have the tendency to keep having sex with no emotional attachment. And then it leads them to an addictive state. So you mentioned porn. For me, porn was one of my triggers. So that's step three, walking away from your triggers. If I'm watching porn, and my type A personality, the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to want to go have sex.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So watching porn, for example, it could be representative of an addiction or contribute to an addiction, but not necessarily everyone who watches porn would be validly considered
an addict.
Sex
That's
addict.
Correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
So you say,
I mean,
again,
the
root is about escaping some type of stress or pain.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I know couples that, and they're happily married and everything, that'll watch porn to spice up there, and they learn new tricks from watching porn, you know. But it goes back to intent. They're not using the viewing of porn to escape pain. They're using it to figure out maybe new things to try. But for me as an addict, I know that's a boundary I can't cross because that would lead me back to an addictive cycle. Because what that represents for me. And that's the thing, a lot of people aren't honest with themselves. Oh, yeah, I can do this. Especially because it goes back to society's views on what constitutes a man, what constitutes a woman, versus you knowing who you are yourself. And being able to say, you know what, I'm strong enough to say I don't need to be watching porn because of what it will do to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, aside from yourself, have you ever had any friends or acquaintances that were also sex addicts and you just witnessed their life just totally spin out of control?
Oh, yeah. And that's what I talk about in the book. When you're what I call a functioning sex addict, as they talk about functioning alcoholics, you're going to surround yourself with other sex addicts because everybody, birds of a feather flock together. So I've seen people's lives just totally, like you said, I know people that literally would have sex on work breaks and were quote-unquote in committed relationships. And that's the real devastating thing about this is people's marriages, as you saw when you went to that meeting, can be totally devastated because one partner is acting out and then the other doesn't know. And that's that could be male or female. As I say, women usually are a little more deceptive, some would say, about the ways that they act out, but they can be just as easily tempted to and be prone to sex addiction just as men. I think what happens is in our society, men are glorified for it. Oh, he's a player, he's a pimp, whereas women are considered bitches and hoes. So they're going to be a little more discreet.
Yeah, you know, there is the infamous double standard.
Yep.
Yeah, because I know you mentioned Tiger Woods earlier. I know one famous celebrity who I remember reading about was supposedly a sex addict was David Duchovny from Californication and The X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
He had checked in for that's funny. Now, see, I didn't take that serious at the time, to be honest, because at the time he checked in, his show was very popular, the show Californication, but it was new.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like he was doing that to promote his show so that people would associate him more with his character, because his character on the show was kind of at least a semi-sex addict, so I didn't know how serious that was.
Well, and that's you bring up a very good point, and that's the thing, and I've talked about in my book. That's the thing about sex addiction. When you're in that cycle, you're sort of really at the top of your game because you remember, just like when you were having the phone sex, your ego was built up, so now you almost feel invincible. So at those times, you get some of your best work, and that's probably what was happening. And even if you just look at the trajectory of other addicts, take sex addiction out of it, look at alcoholics, you'll see people like what's the guy that was on Glee, you know, he's at the top of his game, these other ones that are, the shows are just going great, and then all of a sudden, bam, they're in rehab. And people are like, well, why are they in rehab? They're doing so well. Right, because they're in the prime of their addiction at that height, and then they come crashing down. And it's understanding the addictive cycle. And people that aren't addicts or that haven't had any knowledge or exposure to it don't realize once you're at that peak, the next thing that's going to happen is a big crash.
Now, you were very candid in your book about your sexual activities that resulted as this from this addiction. Why would you say it was important to go into so much detail?
Well, I go back to just like what happened when you started this show. You were told you were not an addict. Now, what if somebody at that particular meeting would have given you the exact same description of what you did? Would you then have questioned, were you an addict?
Wait, okay. Run that by me again. If I was at that sex addiction meeting and somebody
somebody at that meeting gave the exact description of what you were doing in terms of phone sex.
Okay.
Would you then question if you were an addict or not? Because in a sense, that's what you were really going to the meeting for, right? You were trying to determine if you were an addict.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So if you would have gone to that meeting and someone would have said, this is what I do, would you not have then said, ooh, am I an addict?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that's
okay. Yeah.
And that's the exact reason why I had to be candid and graphic in my book.
Okay.
So people that are doing that thing, because they'll dismiss and say, oh, I'm not an addict, and everybody's always looking for a reason not to identify as one.
Yeah. Well, that is the reason I wanted to go, because I wanted to see. But like I said, for me, it was so, because speaking of detail, a lot of people who were at this meeting, they went into really, some specific detail.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's funny because I went into the meeting feeling like I was kind of, for lack of a better word, abnormal.
Right.
But, you have to listen to these people's stories. I felt very normal. I was like, shit, damn, my shit ain't on that level. God damn, man. What the fuck?
That's exactly why I like the SLAA meetings better, because the structure of them is different. I talk about in the book, when I went to the SAA meetings, I started getting new ideas of ways to act out. So you have to be very – it's true. So you have to be very vigilant about what information you're taking in, because – especially when you're in an addictive state and not, getting treatment around it, it can end up being worse.
Okay.
So we take this a little lightly, but the reality is it's very serious, and not only for the individual that has addiction, but the people that are being affected by it. As I say, there's so many casualties of the sex addiction war, and nobody's aware of it.
Now, I read where you frequently do, seminars and workshops and webinars. Do you have any sex addiction workshops coming up or webinars or anything of that nature?
I'm actually in the process of sort of trying to do some more writing in terms of getting the four steps fleshed out in a sort of workbook where people can do that. So I'm still in that process. But what people can definitely do is go to my website, sexsurrender.com, and there's a sex test on there that'll give them sort of 14 questions of characteristics and traits of sex addicts, as well as helpful resources if you are finding yourself falling into that category of sex addiction. There's also the four steps on my website, and I'm going to start doing a blog as well to sort of address the issue. But I really feel the four steps can be utilized for any addiction. And so hopefully they're really not wanting to do 12. I'm 36.
Okay.
And a lot of people aren't wanting to do the 12 steps because it's too daunting. We live in a microwave society. They don't want to focus on all that. 12 steps, I ain't going to try to do all that. But my four steps has been proven by a certified sex addiction therapist to break the sex addiction.
I'm going to have to take your 14-question test to see if I'm a chicken wing addict. Oh, you said it's specific geared towards sex. Because I got to see, I might have to, develop my own group for people, man. I'm going to say, hey, when you really frustrated, do you turn towards the chicken wing? Because, man, I tell you, man, I ain't lying, man. Whenever I'm feeling down and out, I'm like, man, I got to get some chicken wings.
I bet if you go to Overeaters Anonymous or Food Addicts, I'm sure they have a questionnaire. I bet if you just input the word chicken wing, then you'll be able to figure out if you're really a chicken wing addict.
You said when you're an addict, though, you kind of leave casualties in your wake. Other than the chickens themselves, I can't think of anybody I've hurt by my, you know, unless some dude shot himself in the head because I didn't go buy his lasagna at his restaurant or something, but I don't know. Anyway, well, I'm going to tell you, man, it was good conversing with you. I think you've dropped a lot of knowledge and wisdom on my listening audience, and I wish you nothing but continued success with spreading the word and trying to help men and women out, because, you know, who knows, somebody might have listened to this show tonight and said, hey, you know, I might have to examine myself and see if I am indeed an addict. Matter of fact, I was joking about the chicken wings, but I might go ahead and take your 14-question thing. See, and that would break my heart if it ends up somehow saying, Alan, you know, I'm a phone say. But like I said, I don't feel like I am, because I don't, you know, I don't do it like to escape pain. I just do it because I enjoy doing the shit. But anyway, but yeah, man, you know, nothing but continued success to you.
I appreciate it so much.
All right, listeners, that is going to do it for our show this evening. Join me next week. Again, I will have last week's guest on again next week. Again, as I mentioned, she'll be the first female guest I've ever had on my show twice in like a 2 or 3 week period. Her name is Lauren Maservi. She's a Huffington Post writer, and yeah, she will be. Oh, see, Adrian dogging me out of the chat room. She said, Alan, do you really need to take that quiz? Wing addict check. Sex addict check. That's fucked up, Adrian. I mean, well, if I'm an addict, I'm in denial. Whatever Denial Anonymous is, because I'm in denial. I do not consider myself an addict, but, you know, I'm gonna take Armistead's 14 questions. I'm gonna see what happens. But anyway, until next week, have a safe and enjoyable weekend, and I will talk to you next Thursday.